So I should start by thanking the organizers for inviting me. I've been enjoying the conference, Toronto in general, and Chinese food in particular. So thank you. Here's my title slide. There are two titles to this talk. One is the one just announced, and the other is Shadowing Breakdown is Common in Physical Systems. That's a claim. And what I'm trying to do in this talk is to give you some arguments and try to convince you that that is indeed so. And this is me in red, and the three people in blue, Ernie, Edward Ott, and Jimmy York, they are my collaborators. The last two were my advisors in my graduate student days. Now, even though we just saw a talk on shadowing, I think I'll just show you a slide just to remind you of what shadowing is. Now, as was pointed out just now, if you have a true initial condition, which I mark by a black dot out here, and I have nature, which we assume to be correct, and we define to be correct, that is traced out by the blue curve, then no matter how good a computer I have, if I am trying to simulate a chaotic system, I will make errors, and the price for that error will be growing exponentially, and that will be represented by the red curve, which veers away from the true blue curve very soon. But as Tim was saying, if I'm lucky, I can find a separate initial condition which is close to my true initial condition, such that if nature had started her simulation at this green initial condition, then that provides an excellent approximation to my computed trajectory. And the distance between these two trajectories is of the order of my one step error in my simulation. So this is the kind of situation that we want if we are going to simulate numerical things that are numerical simulate chaotic systems. Trouble is that shadowing is rarely guaranteed. As was pointed out by Tim, you can prove that shadowing is guaranteed for hyperbolic systems, but we are now interested in this talk mostly in cases where shadowing is broken. So in particular, there is another situation where you can prove that shadowing does break down. It doesn't tell you how badly it breaks down, but it does tell you that it breaks down. And that's the phenomenon of unstable dimension variability, which also has the name of heteroinstability. So what is that UDV, which is a short form for unstable dimension variability? It is a property when you have a chaotic system that has an attractor such that inside the attractor, thank you, such that inside the attractor, we have at least two unstable periodic orbits that are embedded. UPO is a short form for unstable periodic orbit. If we have such an attractor where we have at least two UPOs embedded, with the additional property that they have different numbers of unstable directions, then we call that unstable dimension variability. And there are beautiful papers that show you that under such situations, you are going to have a breakdown of shadowing. So our goal in this talk is going to be not to prove why that situation leads to shadowing breakdown, because that's already done, but we are going to try to find a chaotic system that exhibits unstable dimension variability without demanding any exact conditions. What is the logic to this exercise? The logic is that if we can find a physical chaotic system that exhibits UDV and consequently unshadowability, then it is reasonable to say that since we did not demand any exact conditions in our parameters or the equation setup, it should follow that in nature we can find such systems with positive probability, because we are not demanding any exact conditions. So if you just went out and picked any old system, there's a good chance that it will be of that type. So, or at least it says that it's not a probability zero case to find in nature. So let me motivate the class of systems that we look at before we finally find the physical system that shows this. We are going to look at a system that can be decomposed into two subsystems. Now, I've broken the subsystems into one called M for major and one for S called small. The way the subsystem decomposition is done is that both M and S are nonlinear systems that can show chaotic behavior, and they are coupled in such a way that S, which is the small system, that fellow gets to see what's going on in M. So M is influencing S through the coupling. However, S does not get to influence M. So it's a unidirectional coupling. Further, we choose the parameters of system M such that M lies on a chaotic attractor. It is fairly easy to find systems where you get chaotic attractors. Then we analyze the properties of the chaotic attractor, and as we know, we can generally expect to find lots of unstable periodic orbits, UPOs, embedded in the chaotic attractor. Let us pick any two of them which are easily visible and call them MA and MB. And after that, we look for a set of parameters for the system S such that when the system M is spending a lot of time close to the first unstable periodic orbit, MA, under such a condition, S will asymptote to a stable orbit. And when M is spending a lot of time near the second periodic orbit embedded in its chaotic attractor, S, under that forcing, will asymptote to another chaotic attractor. Now, this does not put exact condition demands on the parameters of S or M, because it is fairly common to find such properties. In fact, if you try to find a system on the computer, you would find something in 10 minutes that satisfies this property. What is the object of the exercise? The object of the exercise is that since system M, which is really free running because it's not influenced by S, it is tracing out an orbit on the chaotic attractor, so it is going to spend arbitrarily long times, arbitrarily often, near both of these attractors, near both of these unstable periodic orbits, MA and MB. And when that happens, S is going to display either stable orbit behavior or chaotic attractor behavior. Then we can think of two bigger orbits, bigger in because they are written in bigger dimension, called A and B, such that A is such a periodic orbit such that when you project it onto the M space, you get back your old MA, and when you project it on the S space, you get back the stable orbit that S was supposed to go to when M was near MA. So basically, we composed MA and SA, which are lower dimensional orbits, to get a big orbit. We can play a similar game with the B orbits and create a large B orbit, which is in the full dynamical system space, such that its projection on the M space gives me back MB, and its projection on the S space gives me any one of the unstable periodic orbits that are bound to be embedded inside this chaotic attractor, which S tends to when M is near MB. Now, if I can do that, then by construction, my high-dimensional periodic orbit A has only one unstable direction, because essentially it comes from the fact that MA was unstable and SA was stable. So we got only one unstable direction from here. But in the case of B, we get two unstable directions, because there was a scope of unstability since MB itself was unstable, and then again, since this SB, which is an UPO embedded in the chaotic attractor of S, that itself is unstable, so we get a second scope of unstable direction. So by construction, we have a system which can have two periodic orbits embedded in its big attractor, in the full dimension attractor, where A and B have different number of unstable directions, which is just what we were looking for observation of breakdown of shadowing. Now, here's a concrete example of such a system. This is not physical yet. This is just to show the idea, where we have the X system that plays the role of the M, because X is not being influenced by anything else. It's just free running. It's a logistic map, and we've chosen the parameter so that it's very much in the chaotic regime. So it has lots of periodic orbits embedded within it. And then we take a smaller system, smaller within quotes, which is represented by Y, which is coupled to the X system and is greatly influenced by it, because X is sitting in the evolution equation of Y. And we found the parameter, namely 3.0, such that we could create this sort of forced logistic map which displayed exactly the properties that we wanted in the previous slide. Namely, when X spent a lot of time close to the period 1 orbit embedded in the chaotic attractor, Y went to a stable orbit, and when it spent a lot of time near the period 2 chaotic period 2 unstable orbit, then Y became chaotic. Now, if it hadn't worked for period 1 and 2, I would have tried with period 3, 4, and so on. And that would have been equally valid. Now, to give you an idea of what really happens, I have drawn out, this is the same equation I just showed you, and I have plotted the attractor in full two-dimensional space, where the horizontal axis is X, vertical is Y. And what you see as the collection of white points is the chaotic attractor of the global system, which is the full two-dimensional system. And the unstable periodic orbits A and B that we've been talking about are represented here by the crosses. The black cross represents unstable periodic orbit B, which has two unstable directions. Now, there's a way to see why it's too unstable. You can look at the picture and see that there are white dots smeared almost uniformly around it. And the red cross represents the periodic orbit A, which has only one unstable direction. You can pretty much see from the diagram that that appears to be true. Well, that's not rigorous. You actually have to look at the dynamics expanded about these points, and I've done that. And, of course, it works. Now, so far, it's not a physical system, but it shows you that that idea works. So now we extend the same algorithm to a physical system in higher dimensions. What is our physical system? It is the good old double pendulum. Now, I should emphasize that there is nothing special about the double pendulum, and you should not think that we expect to find unshadowability only in double pendulum or double rotors. I just chose this because I used to have a physical double pendulum when I was a graduate student, and I forgot to steal it when I graduated, and that was very good for demos. So that's the only reason I used this. But it's a more complicated system now because it's a real physical system with damping and forcing and differential equations, and I'm not going to go into those details, but I'll point out the essential feature. The essential feature is that the double pendulum is composed of a heavy inner pendulum in red, which I've painted in red out here, and a light outer pendulum, which I've marked in blue out here. Now, and they both hang from a hinge, which hangs from a support, which is oscillated. That's how we feed energy into the system. Now, why is this heavy and light important? It is important because if the blue outer pendulum is infinitely light, then the red inner pendulum doesn't get to feel the effects of the blue pendulum because it's so light. So it's almost like the red pendulum is oscillating of its own accord. On the other hand, the blue pendulum, since it's hanging from the end of the red pendulum, it's got to feel the effects of the red pendulum. Every time it goes through vigorous motion, it feels accelerations. So this is a perfect example of unidirectional coupling between two physical subsystems in the special limit of the outer pendulum going to a mass of zero, relatively. Does this really work? So we go to computer simulations, and here's just a little thing about the coordinates. I should say that the coordinates we are using are the angular displacements of the two pendulum from the vertical, that's theta 1, theta 2, and the angular velocities of these two angles, that's omega 1, omega 2, and after that everything is determined by Newton's laws of motion, so it's a very much four-dimensional map. Well, actually it's a five-dimensional system because it's forced, but then we strobe it at every periodic forcing cycle, so that's like taking a Poincaré section, so we end up with a 4D map. Let us see what it looks like on the computer when we simulate it. And this is what we get. This is the four-dimensional space that is projected onto two dimensions. The horizontal axis is the angle of the inner pendulum, and the vertical is the angle of the outer pendulum. And once again, this is a Poincaré section projection, which means all the points represent measurements taken only at the beginning of each forcing cycle. Remember, I was saying that the support is oscillated to force it. And after that, it is projected from the full attractive space into two dimensions. And you can see that it looks like it is covering up a two-dimensional area. In particular, we find numerical evidence that there are many, many unstable periodic orbits embedded within it. In particular, I have marked the origin with a B, which happens to have two unstable directions. That represents the point when both pendula are sticking straight down and happen to be static at that moment in time, which is a highly unstable situation since we are forcing it, and that is why it has two unstable directions. Now, when we analyze a little bit, we find a period 2 orbit, which I've marked by A, which has only one unstable direction. Now, there's nothing that special about this periodic orbit A, except that that was the first one I found using the program dynamics, which is why I pointed it out. But it could have been true of any other orbit. It wouldn't have made any difference to the argument whatsoever. So now that we've done this, it looks like we have successfully found a physical system that displays unstable dimension variability and consequently unshareability without demanding any exact conditions on the parameters involved. Because what I didn't tell you was that when I tried to figure out the constants, the various parameters associated with the pendula, I didn't have to work too hard to figure out the lengths, masses, friction coefficients, etc. Because all I had to ensure was that I choose parameters so that the inner pendulum, which is free running, is in the chaotic regime, and the outer pendulum is chaotic under certain conditions and not chaotic under certain forcing conditions, which is very, very generic. In fact, I used the identical copies of the pendulum scaled down for mass for both the inner and outer, and it worked. And almost anything works. So it looks like we have found our thing without demanding any special conditions, which is great, because that means that we can go out at a look at a physical pendulum, and there's a chance that that will satisfy these properties, because it's not demanding special conditions. This is why I look happy out here, until I realize that I've been stupid, because I have demanded an exact condition. I have demanded that the coupling be strictly unidirectional. That is not quite right, because in a real physical system, no matter how light the outer pendulum is, it is going to end up perturbing the motion of the inner pendulum. Even if imperceptibly, it will affect it. And we know that in chaotic systems, even imperceptible little variations can have large effects. So how can I say that in that if we make it very light, it's not going to matter? So I've got to analyze that situation. And I should point out that there are physical systems that are unidirectionally coupled, for example, transmitter-receiver systems, etc. But we are interested in more general systems where we don't need this special condition. So this is going to define our new goal. We want to come up with an argument why even with reverse coupling, unstable dimension variability may be expected with positive probability, provided that the reverse coupling is sufficiently weak. If it becomes strong, then it's a different system. So then I can't extend these ideas. So here's a diagrammatic representation of the situation. Once again, I have M and S. But notice how in the new situation, there is a tiny influence emanating from the system S and going off to system M, which I represent here in the equation with this green term that is added to the X system, which was hitherto immune to the dynamics of the Y system. So now the dynamics of X depends on the dynamics of Y, but the term that causes that dependence is of order epsilon, where epsilon is a small quantity. So the whole point of this exercise is to see how what we had in the previous situation, how that extends to a case when we have a little bit of reverse coupling. Once again, not strong reverse coupling, then it's a totally different system, and we can't extend whatever we had here. So today we are going to look at a computer simulation-aided approach to an argument that the unshadowability in this situation is not immediately destroyed when epsilon is positive. So this is a fancy way of writing the same thing down. So how does that argument work? Well, we keep in mind three key points. I'm also going to cover my slides. Okay, first thing is that when we add that little perturbation to our dynamical system that allows the weak subsystem to influence the strong subsystem, that little perturbation leaves most of the unstable periodic orbits that were embedded in the attractor, they leave them intact. They get moved, of course, because you've changed the dynamics, but they are not destroyed. At least most of them are not destroyed. And that's important. It's important that all those embedded 1U and 2U, which represents one unstable and two unstable direction, unstable periodic orbits, they are shifted but not destroyed. So they are somewhere in the vicinity. Next thing we need to realize is that in d-dimensional space, unstable periodic orbits that have one unstable and two unstable directions respectively, they have d-1 and d-2 dimensional stable manifolds, locally speaking, over here. Of course, because it's d minus the number of unstable and gives you the number of stable directions. Finally, and this is important, in d-dimensional space, if you have an attractor that is of dimension 2 or more, it is going to contain all the nearby 1U and 2U UPOs. Why do I say that?